Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Pop.
Views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Left Field. This one is the postseason struggle. This is our 7th or 8th episode of the season. And today what we're going to be covering is just in up-to-dates. We're going to cover the updates on the how the postseason has gone so far. And we're going to talk a little bit about the MVP race, Cy Young Award winner, and Rookie of the Year. We were meant to talk about, actually, those three topics, the award ceremony side of it. We're meant to talk about that last week, but unfortunately the show did not broadcast, which was really unfortunate. I'm really sorry to anyone who's listening now who tried to listen last week and came up short, found nothing. I hope you didn't waste too much time searching for the episode. So yeah, that's the apology over. Let's jump straight into the show. So this is Straight Out of Left Field with on Blog Talk Radio, Radio AFS with Fatboy Media and DRCP Army. Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to have the system actually working again. And it's a really exciting time to be talking about baseball. It's a really exciting time to watch baseball. And it goes quickly as well. Postseason goes really, really quickly. We've already had, it's amazing, we've already had four nights really of baseball. Currently, Houston are 4-3 down in the bottom of the fourth at Fenway. Boston trying to make a comeback. They're two leading the series. Well, Boston are 2-0 down in the best of five series in the AL American League Division Series Game 3. So yeah, they'll want a response. They don't want to go out on a whimper, especially at Fenway. To let's be honest, a very strong Houston Astros side. Now, just before we do jump in, I'm going to start with the MVP talk, and then we're going to go into what's been happening in this kind of last week. I'm going to break down a little bit of analysis of not just the games, but what they mean, and which performances in which games are worth mention. So let's jump right in. But before we talk about the MVP and before we talk about the games, I just want to play a little clip, because I think it's going to be a new thing in the show from now on. It's going to relive a memory, my baseballing, I won't say knowledge, but experience, for instance, only goes back maybe, probably only goes back about 6 years. So we're going to relive a memory of recent baseball history. Maybe not actually recent. Maybe it's probably going to be anything really before each show starts. So what we're going to do is we're going to listen to this clip, and then we're going to talk a little bit about it, just what the significance is. Yeah, and I hope you enjoy it. It's something that, for me personally, brings back a lot of memories and a lot of emotion as well. So,
and that brings up Jeter.
Now batting for the Yankees, number 2, Derek Jeter. Number 2.
Well, the script is there. The last page is in Derek's hands. Meek deals. To right field. Here comes Richardson. Here's the throw for Marquez. Richardson is safe. Derek Jeter ends his final game with a walk-off single. Derek Jeter, where fantasy becomes reality.
Did you have any doubt? Well, that was on the 25th of September, 2014. It was against the Orioles. It was Derek Jeter's final game for the New York Yankees. Love him or hate him. I read a really interesting article the other day, actually, about how, compared to other shortstops of his time, not just of his time, but of history, who are in the Hall of Fame, Derek Jeter's potentially not that impressive if you take away the World Series to the all-time greats. And you know, when he did retire, there was talk of him being an all-time great. Obviously, for a Yankees fan, for anyone who has any following of the New York Yankees, Derek Jeter is an icon of the last few decades, but the last couple of decades. But it is interesting just how much a team like, say, the New York Yankees or the LA Dodgers, for instance, I wouldn't say improved the image of a player per se. You know, if he had made the same numbers at, say, the Oakland A's, played there all his career, didn't win a World Series, would he be considered an all-time great? He'd be considered a Hall of Famer, no doubt. 3,000 hits, the consistency, the years of service, the career batting average of 300. But would he be considered the all-time great if he wasn't Mr. November, if he hadn't had the home run caught by the kid out in right field during the was it against the Orioles in the American League Division Series that went on to win the World Series after that? You know, probably not. I think there is a good argument to suggest that he's possibly not as great as an all-time great. But again, that's being really picky. And let's not take anything away from the captain. So that's the memory. That's 25th of September 2014. And that wasn't actually his final game for the New York Yankees. He went on to play two more games, I think it was, against Boston, where he got his final hit for the team, which he captained for a ridiculous long period of time. And it was actually, his final hit wasn't a clean line drive to right field, as was kind of epitomized his career, which the walk-off hit was. It was a Baltimore chop. He chopped it up to third base. Pretty lucky, you could say, hit, and ran out an infield single. So that was his final hit. What's also interesting for that clip that always brings up kind of memories is the guy who scored, Antone Richardson, who was a career minor leaguer, very quick. It was actually quite rare to have a guy who was just there purely for speed, who was actually 33 at the time as well. And he's a really interesting character, and I saw him in the reason why I picked the clip was I saw him in the news recently because he was doing some charity work and he'd retired officially. I didn't realize actually how old he was. He got on base from a Jose Perella single and then bunted over by Brett Gardner. Jose Perella, who's now playing for the Padres, in actual fact. So, great. So moving on. So that's probably more interesting for me than it is for most other people. Probably makes most people roll their eyes, actually, the thought of reliving Derek Jeter. Anyway, so the first topic of conversation I want to bring up is the MVP race. MVP race, Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, whatever you want to call it. And let's just see what I have brought up. Okay, so let's start with the American League Cy Young. I think it was unthinkable. It seemed unthinkable to anyone that Chris Young would win the AL Cy Young Award at the end of July. But Corey Kluber has surpassed the struggling Red Sox ace in this last August and September. September especially, he's really struggled, and you can you can see that in the postseason when the Astros, Jose Altuve especially, made him look pretty average in the first game of their series. That was a real momentum shift. But we'll talk about that in due course. So yeah, Corey Kluber he's nine and two with an ERA of about 1.8. End of July, his ERA is 2.6, which is 3 points lower than Sale. He was 12-4, and then wins again because of the emergency of bullpens and pitchers not being able to throw more than maybe 110 pitches in a game. Probably doesn't mean too much, but his WHIP is the percentage of time that someone gets on base against him, 0.91. It led the league that's a pretty good indicator of just how good a pitcher he is. And then his ERA plus was a 1.75, which is the amount of runs. It's like a kind of Bill James sabermetric, which statistic about kind of what how many runs you should have given up in the season compared to how many runs you didn't give up. And that ERA plus 1.75, I think, which is a point, it put one like a point, and then 7.5 of his normal ERA, was the lowest of its kind around when you consider the different factors like teams Cleveland have played, ballparks that Cleveland have played in. That ERA actually is the best in the league. And he had a WAR of just under 6, which was, I want to say, I think it was the best for a starting pitcher in the American League as well. That's wins above replacement. So they pretty much 6 extra wins using him, whereas the Red Sox only got 5 using Chris Sale. But then, again, that statistic, it's a little bit more... It's not as easy as that. A lot of analysts can't really decide on what to put in more. But, again, the fact that Corey Kluber's is higher can only mean... You know, it's only a positive for his case. Now, Chris Sale, his Ks per 9 was the best in the league. His Ks per walk average was the best in the league. He had a terrific season, but he's really just kind of fallen by the wayside, really. Fallen by the wayside in not just the kind of in late August, he really struggled. He had some really shaky performances. The games that he faced the Yankees in 4 games post All-Star break, the Red Sox really wanted to make a point of having him facing the Yankees, and it really kind of backfired because they only won one of the 4 games that he pitched against them after the All-Star break, which was not that division could have been a lot more comfortable for the Red Sox if he had won say 3 or 4 of those games, which he was expected to do. And which they traded a whole bunch of prospects for that as well. You know, they didn't trade Juan Mercado to the White Sox so that he could strike out 14 guys against the White Sox, for instance. They traded him so that he'd win 3 or 4 games out of 4 against their division rivals. And the third guy I want to mention, just kind of a shout out really. He hasn't had a season that either of those two pitchers have had. But Luis Severino will get some Cy Young Award votes. He had a 3.1 ERA, which is, you know, again, is very, very good compared to the rest of the league. But also, it's not too far off Sale's. And also considering the fact that they are playing the AL East, which is arguably the most competitive league with the most quality in baseball. Both Sale and Severino have played a number of games against the Cleveland Indians. They've played quite a couple of. Well, Sale has pitched an awful lot against Houston. What that's meant is that actually their ERA plus the kind of adjusted ERA for both of those pitchers has been very high because they've had a heavy workload. They've pitched a lot of innings against a lot of really good teams as well. So his ERA plus at 1.49 is only Sales is 1.55. So kind of gives you an idea. ERA, if you adjust the ERA, it's very, very similar. His Ks per 9 is 10.5, which is, again, remarkable. And his WAR of 4.5, his wins above replacement of 4.5, you know, definitely cement him as the Yankee ace of the regular season. And I wouldn't say the postseason because he had an awful start against the Twins and didn't carry over, but he had a tremendous regular season, which is why I'd put him in the Cy Young bracket top for the American League. National League, for me, Max Scherzer. Now, you can talk about Gio Gonzalez and Clayton Kershaw, and they'd be my 2 and 3. Kershaw, I don't think, has pitched enough. He's the odds-on favorite every year, but injuries in the last 2 years, I think, have probably derailed his hopes for a fourth Cy Young. He's been on the disabled list. He pitched last night, I want to say. Yeah, he pitched last night. No, 2 nights ago in the win for the Dodgers in the 5-9 win for the LA Dodgers. But that was the first time he pitched since July 23rd. I'm or he may have had one start, but the point is that he was injured pretty much all of September, all of August, with a back strain. And his dominating, he had really good numbers, but then so did Scherzer, so did Gio Gonzalez, and they weren't out for those extended periods of time. I don't think he'll accrue enough starts to really outlast Scherzer for that place. He's 15-2, but then most of the Dodgers pitchers have unbelievable records just because of that unbelievable win to loss record ratio that they had about in early August. And then, you know, his ERA of 2.4, again, it's ace-like. Ks per walk leads the league. ERA plus leads the league. WAR 4.7, very, very strong. But the WAR is not as high as Scherzer or Gonzalez just because he hasn't played enough games. He hasn't pitched in enough games. Why do I put Gonzalez over Scherzer? Now, these two guys, front end of the Washington Nationals rotation, put Scherzer over Gonzalez for one main reason is that all the main statistics, he's just that little bit better. In K to walks, he's better. In his whip is better. His K per nines is better. His ERA is slightly better. His record, his finishing record of 12-5 was the same. And he was marginally ahead on wins above replacement. He is the front line of that rotation, Max Scherzer. And he was on the disabled list towards the end of the season. And honestly, you could say, well, you're being a bit hypocritical because Scherzer, Kershaw didn't last it, but he wasn't on the disabled list for that amount of time. And it seems as when he was on the disabled list, such a big deal was made of him missing a couple of starts. He had one bad pitching performance since April, and that was a 5-inning, 5-run effort. I want to say it was against the Marlins, but that could be complete rubbish. That could be rubbish, but I think it was against the Marlins, and he gave up 5 runs. And you have to go back to April for that. That's the kind of consistency, that kind of dominance that a Cy Young award winner probably should have. I think the foremost challenge from him is Gio Gonzalez, of his teammate. And he's been spectacular. He was spectacular in his last 6 starts, sorry. He logged I can't actually remember the statistic, but I think it was 0.8 ERA in his last 6 starts. He had an unbelievable record towards the end of the year. It is unlikely that he'll get votes, but it's unlikely that he'll beat Scherzer just because Scherzer, he's the ace of his same rotation, and his statistics are just that bit better. But he definitely has to have an honorable mention. Other honorable mentions, I think, have to go to Zach Greinke, whose statistics, if you put them into the American League, would probably challenge Keuchel. But the fact that he's in the National League, and that therefore the ERA of some of the top line pitchers is just that much, much lower. He's got an ERA of 3.16. Compare that to, say, a Scherzer, for instance, and you get a weaker candidate. Again, another moment to Alex Wood, the other Los Angeles Angels, Los Angeles Dodgers, sorry, pitcher, who's had a unbelievable year, who's really been kind of... It's a shame because in a rotation where you have Kershaw, Darvish, Alex Wood, Rich Hill, the individual brilliance of each one of those guys, except for probably Kershaw, like say Rich Hill for instance, and Wood is goes under the radar a bit. And they've been both of those two pitchers have been so good this year. Alex Wood led the league in ERA and wins for a lot. I think he's got the best wins to loss record of 14-1. That an almost guaranteed win for the Dodgers when he was pitching. It's just that kind of the more peripheral statistics like Ks per walk, ERA plus, the WHIP, his WAR are not on the same level as Kershaw. And I think if you put him on a team that scored less runs and played less good, played their defense to a lower degree, Alex Wood's ERA would probably be a bit higher, and his wins to loss ratio would be a lot lower as well. So I think he's definitely a player who deserves a mention, but at the same time has been made look really good by the Dodgers, and that's why he's only an honorable mention. Now the let's move to the Rookie of the Year. And for the National League, it's an easy decision. Cody Bellinger, he's hit 39 regular season home runs, which if Aaron Judge didn't do what he did, Cody Bellinger would be probably getting the same amount of hype as Aaron Judge. He's hit 280, I think he's hit 266 all year, 39 home runs. I want to say he was close to 100 RBIs. He carried that team through a large part of their winning streak, and the streak where they went 48 and 2. He's been tremendous. If you're from California, if you support the Dodgers, this kid is one for the future. But not just from the future, but he's from the now as well. You know, he's a future talent who has 7 years of team control, but he's contributing to that lineup like an everyday $25 million player who they're only having to pay $540,000 under the first 2 years before first 3 years before he reaches arbitration. So Cody Bellinger, yeah, unbelievable. You know, that's a unanimous decision as for the National League award winner, and a really big part of why the Dodgers won so many games, and probably a reason why, if they do get to the World Series, why they'll have home field advantage. The amount of wins, the 103 wins that they did win, he's a crucial a part of that, I think. So a lot has been given to him, but I think even more so, a lot has to be given to Aaron Judge, because without Aaron Judge, the New York Yankees would not be in the postseason at the moment. Now, I know they're not doing very well. I know they look like they're about to crash out, but his 50 home runs, you know, record breaking, most home runs in a home ballpark since Babe Ruth, you know, hit 33 Yankee Stadium home runs, hits the ball 500 feet, home run derby winner. Yeah, you know, I don't need to go into that too much, because we're going to go into that during the MVP discussion. Again, that's even a more unanimous decision. Aaron Judge for the American League Rookie of the Year. Now, the American League Most Valuable Player, I think, is a really interesting, and I think it's going to be quite challenging to decide. Now, the contenders are Jose Ramirez, second baseman, third baseman for the Indians, who hit 54 doubles this year, hit over 300, had a breakout year, you know, an absolute career year. And the amount of work and dedication he put in to become from a utility infielder who played a bit of left field to now being an everyday second baseman, pushing Kipnis out of the team, really, or playing a bit of third base, and carrying that team where the emphasis is no longer on Encarnacion, but Jose Ramirez, who improves the team throughout the lineup because they don't want to pitch to him. They don't want to pitch to the guys around him. They have to pitch the guys around him because they don't want him to come up on base, because he's got that, because he got 54 doubles, 26 home runs or something in that region. That performance alone his performance alone has probably contributed to a vast majority of those 101 wins the Indians managed over the regular season. So he's definitely going to get some votes. I don't think he'll win it because his numbers just don't add up to Altuve or Judge, but he's definitely worth it. And I think if you're an Indians fan, you want him to get. You could argue that because of Judge's batting average, actually the more consistent hitter was Ramirez. Now I disagree. I think it's between Judge and Altuve, but again, the voting can be quite unpredictable at times. So between Judge and Altuve, I think the arguments for Altuve are pretty obvious. There hasn't been too many people who have hit 347 in a year. He's got 32 stolen bases. He has a 960 plus OPS. His on base percentage is a bit lower than Judge's, but it's very, very high. He's got power from the leadoff spot. And his stolen base, you know, he's a stolen base threat. He's a threat to run. He distracts pitchers. And the average, I think the main statistic though that does jump out there is the batting average, which is so destructive to a lineup. Now they both players have around an 8 wins above replacement. But it hasn't been seen for a while, someone with that type of, that blend of power and hitting ability. And also someone who kind of breaks a mold. You know, someone who's 5'6" isn't meant, or I won't say meant, but someone who's 5'6" isn't given a lot of, is given, let's say, a cross in the box immediately when a scout looks at them, I think. I think baseball could be a little bit more inclusive with Jose Altuve shows that, you know. He's a rarity in the game. And again, so is Judge. So is Judge. Scouts look at Judge and they query whether he's got holes in his swing, which when he does lose focus, he does have a hole in his swing. And it's tremendous what he's managed to do, considering the fact that pitchers are pitching to him so carefully. With Altuve, you can't really pitch to him carefully because he can hit the ball anywhere and the strike zone is so small compared to maybe other guys because Altuve is a lot shorter. But with Judge, you know, I think the same arguments can be made. You say, look, what he's managed to do is the strike zone against Judge is a lot bigger. His swing's a lot longer, so it's probably a little bit more difficult for him not to strike out. And he struck out over 200 times. And I think, you know, that is probably a major criticism. Does he break a mold, you know, 200 times? Is so unproductive. But then you match that with the 52 home runs. And that's the home runs break records. They draw fans in. He has the Judge's Chambers, an area of a stadium named after him. And he's carried the team, you know, the Astros probably get to the postseason without Jose Altuve, maybe with a replacement player playing there. But the Yankees don't get to the postseason. They probably do beat the Twins, but he then contributes to the Twins to win against the Twins in the wild card game. And I think the fact that the Yankees are in the postseason and it's pretty much down to him and the great start they got in the first half with his great performances put him at the forefront of my biased. I'm going to say it by, you know, my biased opinion regarding Judge, but I think he is the MVP. However, I can understand 100% if Altuve gets it and may deserve it because of the consistency. Judge had the huge slump, the consistency and the batting average, which is just so high in the age of power pitching and scouting reports. And I think it's really impressive what Jose Altuve has done. So that's the American League MVP. I know it's a very, the other decisions have been really conclusive. You know, Judge and Bellinger, rookies, Scherzer, Cy Young. Who else was it? Kluber, Cy Young. They're decisive decisions, but I can't really make my mind up on that because I think if I wasn't a Yankee fan, for instance, I may favor Altuve just because of the batting average. But do you factor in postseason with that? Because I know it's regular season MVP, but the fact that the Yankees didn't have to go through this long rebuilding phase mainly because of Aaron Judge. And the effect that he's had on the league with, you know, his humble nature, which is really good to see. Do you take that into consideration? And I think I personally do, but then look, I look for any excuse to make a Yankee an MVP. So I'll lay that decision up to you. With the National League MVP, it's Joey Votto. For me, his statistics are all just a little bit. Joey Votto for me is, you know, many voters and players believe that the MVP must probably be a contender. I've just argued that. I've just said, you know, Judge got the Yankees to the World Series. That should factor in with his MVP choice. And not World Series. Did I say World Series? My goodness, postseason, sorry. Aaron Judge has got, I don't think the Yankees are going to go to the World Series. Pardon me. But, so Judge has got them to the postseason. I've given him credit for that. And that's why I've put him above Altuve. But Votto doesn't come, you know, the Cincinnati Reds lost. They only won about 66 games, I think, this year. I can understand, you know, he probably faced a bit easier pitching because the team's probably beating the Reds most of the time. They probably got players on base that came up to hit as much as other teams. So he probably got more pitches down the middle to hit. You could argue that. But at the same time, I think that severely limits the... I think that view severely limits the field and integrity of the competition for teams out of the race. I think that every game matters, no matter what the standings. And these are individual awards, remember. and the teams are awarded rings and division pennants and stuff like that, but this is an individual award. And Joey Votto, as tempting as it is to say, look, Paul Goldschmidt, another first baseman, he's got his team to the wild card, and that's fair enough. I agree. I think Paul Goldschmidt's had a terrific year, but his year, all of his numbers are just a little tad lower than Votto. His on base percentage, his batting average, his slugging percentage, and he reached base about 50 more times than I think it was about 50 more times than Goldschmidt did as well. Now Goldschmidt does run a little bit better, but I don't think you really measure a first baseman on his running ability. And they both rank amongst the best fielders in the game. So I wouldn't really. I can understand you giving the emphasis there to Goldschmidt, but the fact is that, look, Judge is a different player than Altuve, so that's why I'd favor the home runs, and that's why then I'd, because there's a split, you know, Judge is on base, slugging, home runs is better than Altuve's, but Altuve's other numbers are better, and then I bring in the postseason kind of evaluation to it. I think with Goldschmidt and Votto, I leave the postseason analysis out of it because all of the numbers for Joey Votto are significantly, but consistently better than Paul Goldschmidt. So that's why I'd give it to Joey Votto. And if you want to talk about honorable mentions, Giancarlo Stanton, leads the league in homers and slugging, but he's outside the top 10 on base percentage, which, look, if you're buy into Moneyball, you may say that on-base percentage is more important than any of those statistics. And Blackman as well. Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies leads the league in number of bases. But again, he does play most of his games, half his games at Coors Field, which is a hitter-friendly park. And I think if you are talking about number of bases, you're thinking of, you know, stretching singles into doubles, doubles into triples, and that's perfect for Coors Field. So I would take away some of his achievements. Not take away, but I'd take them with a pinch of salt to a certain degree. Anyway, so yeah, that's my decision. I think Joey Votto, MVP. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because of the Goldschmidt, because of the wild card thing. But I think if they do crash out, which they look like they're doing, I think they're 2-0 down to the LA Dodgers in the NL National League Division Series that they're playing this evening, I think. No, next, tomorrow evening. Then I would definitely give it to Joey Votto, just for the impact that he's had. I think that brings up another question as well, another really interesting question. That question is, do the Reds trade Votto? Because look what Sale got for the White Sox. He got Juan Makata, a player valued at $50 million by the Red Sox organization, who paid that much money for a signing bonus and fine. That's what Chris Sale got, and he's got, I think, 3 more years or 2 more years left on his contract. Joey Votto, I'm just going to look it up because I don't know for sure, but I think he's got long-term team control. And for the amount of time that he gets on base and the help that people need at first base, a lot of teams value first, you know, production at first base is so important to a lineup. Lots of teams rely on production from first base. Look at Greg Bird at the Yankees. The Yankees relied on Greg Bird. And so most of their struggles, especially the first half and second half, was getting no production from first base. And that's the parallel that I draw. I think that's the best parallel this year. But, yeah, first base power, power and average and all that stuff is really, really important. He signed a 10-year, $225 million deal in... Ooh. Yeah, he's got 9 more years left on his contract. He's on a 10-year, $225 million contract, which includes the full guarantee, and he's there until he's a free agent in 2025. My goodness, so there's 7 years of team control. That is... Now, look, it's $25 million, but I'm sure as inflation of wages go up, $25 million for a player who, yeah, he'll probably, the numbers may recede slightly. He's 34 at the moment, so you could say that, let's say, in 3 years' time, he starts to see what Miguel Cabrera is happening at the Tigers, and his numbers do start to drop off. I don't think his walks will drop off. I think he'll still be an on-base threat. or a threat to get on base. I wouldn't say stealing bases, but threat to get on base. I could see, you know, 3 or 4 more productive years. Do you risk it? That's a difficult. I think that's a really difficult question, because the Reds have back-ended this contract. So the first few years of the deal, they only paid him 12, 14, 20, 22. Next year, it starts, gets bumped up to 25. That's a bit more of a problem, I think, because of the age and because of the dollars. But if they did trade him and they did eat some of the cash, I think, if they ate, say, maybe $5 or $10 million a year of that cash, the amount of return that they could get for that, if they did, and he got a full no trade clause, granted, but I think he probably would go if he did, because you never won a World Series and time is kind of running out per se. You could say that. He probably would, in my opinion, I think he would waive it, a bit like Brandon Phillips did to the Braves, you know, kind of saw a new opportunity. He probably would. They could get a terrific haul, maybe 3. Really elite prospects. Maybe considering the age, you may only be limited to 3 elite prospects. You could have 2 elite prospects and 3 potential prospects. But in the situation the Reds are, where they are pitching, the pitching prospects the Reds have aren't great. Now they did improve with some of the trades mid-season, and they did get some pieces, but the amount of elite prospects the Reds have in their organization, is severely lacking. And I think, in my opinion, you go through the full rebuild. I know he's the face of the franchise, and I know he brings people into the ballpark, but Joey Votto, for me, has to be traded this year. And it doesn't look like the Reds are going to get better anytime soon. So I'd trade Joey Votto while he still has, and while he still has market value, because in 2 years' time, if he starts to look like he's starting to recede in ability, teams could take that as a trend, and all of a sudden you're left with a Jacoby Ellsbury, a decent player, on way too much money, who you just can't move without taking an enormous amount of cash, without, you know, swallowing an enormous amount of cash. So that's the Joey Votto argument. So we've got Joey Votto as the MVP, Cy Young, Max Scherzer, Rookie of the Year Cody Bellinger, this is the National League. And in the American League, we've got Judge as Rookie of the Year, potentially MVP as well with Altuve. And I'd have Corey Kluber as the Cy Young. So that wraps up the award ceremony section of today's show. And it moves us nicely along to the postseason struggle. As we have 22 minutes left of streaming, of live streaming. I don't really fancy going over that too much. I think where it is for me, I'm 10 o'clock. I know for listeners, I think it's 2 o'clock in the Pacific, if you're in Pacific time. So you have the luxury of being able to stay awake for another 8-9 hours, where I don't. So I'm a little bit tired. Let's get through this. This has been a really interesting, exciting. It's gone by really quickly. Start of the postseason. Now, Ken Rosenthal, who is the Fox Baseball Insider, wrote a really interesting article. It was quite an insightful article, and it was quite a thought-provoking article for many people about the wild card. And because of the new two-way wildcard, the new two-system wildcard, two-team wildcard, although it does mean that more teams are competing, and I think it's healthy that way, because it meant that teams like the Angels, the Twins, the Seattle Mariners, the Rays, all traded 4 players at the trade deadline, and it kept their fans interested because there was a second wildcard, because they knew they didn't have to catch the Yankees. All they had to do was beat the other teams around them. It made baseball a lot more interesting. Now, is that healthy? Is there a lot? Does it probably mean that there's more teams who are kind of pretenders and not really contenders? Probably more teams that sacrifice prospects when they probably should be saving them. You could argue that. But what it also means is that a team who's won 10 more games. So let's take the Twins and the New York Yankees, who are in the American League wildcard. If we take them, the Yankees won 91 games. The Twins, however, Twins won, if I just find, 85 games. And then the other seasons, of the Rockies won 87 games compared to the Diamondbacks 95 games. So both, in both circumstances, the other team won 5 more games. So they had the difference between having a really good year and having a great year. Is it fair, therefore, the Diamondbacks, who won 93 games, is it fair that the Yankees have won 91 games, get knocked out and get knocked out of the postseason? And for me, no, I don't think so. But then that's my biased opinion. Ken Rosenthal certainly didn't think so either. I think he kind of made it clear in his article. He's like, this will be a very interesting conversation by some team executives who will moan if the Diamondbacks or the Yankees were to be knocked out of the wild card, because it would have seemed a little bit maybe unfair to say the team who hadn't even won 90 wins, who hadn't won 90 games, not the team who had won 90 games, out. That would have been interesting. It would probably have been very contentious, and it probably would have been a bit bitter, but it didn't happen. So that was all hypothetical, and then we can wait until next year. And next year, when the wild card does come around, which, believe it or not, it'll probably feel pretty quick. Time does fly. It seemed like only last year when the Cubs were winning the World Series for the first time and was 106 years. It's amazing how quickly the seasons come around. We'll see next year if that circumstances play up again. So, day one of the postseason, Twins took a 3-0 lead in the first inning against Luis Severino, the Yankee ace who we were talking about. He bottled it, I think is a good way of putting it, and the Yankee offense managed to rally from behind. Didi Gregorius with a 3-run home run, a really kind of unsung hero, I think, in that lineup. And they managed to Aaron Judge with a home run. They salvaged that game, saved their blushes, saved Severino's blushes, great bullpen performance, and got through 8-4 in the wildcard game. D-backs and Rockies, 8-11 was the final score in this one. Paul Goldschmidt led off the first inning with a 3-run home run. Jake Lamb went 4-for-5. They had 4 triples in the game, including one by pitcher Archie Bradley to drive in 2 runs. And they had a 6-0 lead. Rockies did rally back, but it seemed as if the Diamondbacks had that one kind of in control. And I think they kind of found out the Rockies, found out their pitching, and found out that they really probably their pitching really wasn't really up to scratch. And if you are giving up 11 runs in the wildcard game, your pitching probably isn't up to scratch. And the D-backs being found out for that again, because they gave up 8 runs and their pitching hasn't been great against the Dodgers. 8 runs and 9 runs given up this so far. So you can only really rely on Goldschmidt and Lamb to drive in runs. That can only get you so far. But they got through, so that was kind of those blushes of the weaker team winning didn't come to bear. Now in the first day of the division series, is the Indians, Trevor Bauer, 6 clean innings, like efficient, cold, not cold performance, being an unbelievable kind of pitching performance. Who a lot of criticism were given Trevor Bauer. They said, look, the Yankees need to win this first game against Bauer. He's the weaker of the pitchers against, Kluber's coming up the day after. Yankees need to get on Bauer. Bauer pitched really, really well. And so did the rest of the, Miller came in and struck out 3. Cody Allen came in and struck out 3. And really kind of showed that the Yankees set the tone, really. You shouldn't be here. If you should be here, we're the better team. And it was abundantly clear after that first. I think it was a really demoralizing win. But they did bounce back from it. The offense did. Pitching, not so much. We'll talk about game 2 in a little bit. Now, in the other game on day 1, the Red Sox, now they lost 8-4 to the Houston Astros. Now, this personally made me feel a bit better. It felt, look at that. The Red Sox lost. We lost. So what? That's okay. As long as the Red Sox don't get through, I'm happy. Sale was completely blown away. Now, we talked about his struggles a little bit through August. We talked about how Sale... It seems that he's lost the control of his fastball. And I think a lot. If he can locate it up and he can locate it down, the pitches, his, you know, his great slider and his great changeup. The changeup, when I watched him throw the changeup, it doesn't seem as if it's particularly accurate, to be honest, or maybe not as accurate as the fastball. But because of the variation, because of the deceptive way he throws it, it's so effective. But what I've seen against the Houston, you know, the two home runs he gave up to Altuve, and against when he struggled against the Yankees earlier in the regular season, earlier in this year, it seemed as if his fastball, when he was trying to throw it up, which he's so usually so effective at doing, kind of leaves it flat down the middle. Altuve capitalized on that, and if he can't locate up and down with his fastball, then his other pitches, which are good, but again, you can't really rely on your slider to pitch you through a whole game when he usually relies that to be down and away, out of the zone, and the fastball to get you in the strike zone. So he seems like he's struggling with the fastball command. And he was found out against the Astros, straight away took a lead, and they didn't really look back. Good pitching performance from Justin Verlander as well. Outpitched Sale. Not what the Red Sox were looking for when they spent so many of their prospects, so many elite prospects, on getting him. Now, it must have felt a little bit like deja vu, to be honest, or maybe not because it was so. Maybe not because it was only the next day. But Keuchel, 8-2 again in Houston. Keuchel completely outdueled Pomeranz. Pomeranz only left in the third or fourth inning. A pitcher who's been so good this year for the Red Sox, especially in high leverage situations, against division rivals, against strong teams, a really poor performance. And another onslaught, really, from the Houston Astros. Again, there's no doubt throughout that day, throughout that game, I should say, that was going to be what happened. If we do look a little bit further into it, you know, George Springer had two hits, Altuve had two hits, Correa had two hits, home runs by Correa, Springer, Correa in the first inning, 2-run home run in the first inning against Pomeranz. That's relentless. You know, I think that's really difficult for a pitcher who, you know, if you come into the game and almost immediately you are giving up runs. And it sets the tone for the rest of the game, especially in a postseason environment where each game means so much. Keuchel, 5 2/3, 1 run. Devenski came in, pitched an inning in a third, got out of trouble in the sixth with no runs. Gregerson and Giles again, 2. Well, Gregerson had a good inning, and Giles, he did give up a run, but he got out of it in the end. And, you know, and when he's scoring 8 runs, it should give you a huge advantage. But then the Yankees did that the same night. They scored 8 runs, and they lost the game. Probably one commentator said, Brian Hoke, who is beat reporter for the New York Yankees, said it was the most painful game, postseason game he's experienced. And from a kind of, I think it was 10-year veteran. I think it was him. It may not have been him. Don't quote me on that. But it was from a Yankee reporter, at least. It was one of the most painful losses in their postseason memory. And let me talk you through it a little bit. So they had an 8-3 lead. Yeah, they had an 8-3 lead over Cleveland going into the sixth inning. And what happened in the sixth inning was that, I'll talk you through it. So what happened was, Sabathia's pitching. Sabathia had pitched really well. He gave up a couple of runs, but they were on errors. Todd Frazier had an awful game at third base. And he walked Santana. Bruce lined out the shortstop to Eddie Gregorius. So there's one on, one out. Chad Green came in, who's been so good, but again he's been used in three. He was used in two games. He was used in the wild card game, and now he's used again here in the bottom of the sixth inning. To be honest, I think CC should have stayed in. He was pitching well. He pitches well further into the games. He stayed in. Austin Jackson initially got an out. So it's 2 outs. Yan Gomes doubled. Bear in mind, this is 8-3. Then this is where the moment happened. This will be talked about in Yankee history, I think. If the Yankees don't win this series, which it doesn't look like they will, because the amount of times that someone has come back for in a five-game series from 2-0 down, you can count on two hands. 7 times it's happened in the last 100 years or something. Lonnie Chisenhall was pitched to by Green, and he got 2 strikes, and he threw a pitch that hit the end of Chisenhall's bat, and it was caught by Sanchez. Now, that should be a strikeout. It hit the bat and was caught, so that's a strikeout. Now, the umpire immediately jumped up from home plate and said it hit him, which is fair enough. You know, it probably was a sound, and if it wasn't, if it didn't hit him, he could have reviewed it. You know, at that point as well, because it was coming up to the sixth inning, this whole incident, and this has been the incident of the postseason so far. If it is a strikeout, the inning is over. It goes into the seventh inning, and the Yankees probably go on to win the game. They've got a 5-run lead, and they have some big arms in their bullpen that can save them. And they'll have a 5-run lead. Because Joe Girardi didn't challenge that play, because Chisenhall was hit by the pitch, and then Lindor came up and hit the grand slam afterwards, because of that incident, the Indians are put straight back in the game, and Joe Girardi, in my opinion, arrogantly dismisses Sanchez. When Sanchez says they hit him, but Joe Girardi says, well, actually, we don't have conclusive evidence yet, because the replay guy hasn't seen the replay yet. This is arrogance by Joe Girardi. He looked at Sanchez, he's probably thinking, okay, young guy, emotional. He's probably thought, oh, well, he's messed up quite a few times with the pass ball. You know, his defense has been pretty poor. Probably had a negative view of Sanchez. I've got no idea. You know, he seems to be really critical of him recently. But he maybe didn't trust him. I've got no idea what he was doing. But he arrogantly dismisses Sanchez's claim to review it and says they're not going to review it because they don't want to waste a challenge. You get another challenge after the seventh inning anyway if you don't have one, because the umpires are allowed the challenge, and the umpires allow the challenge by themselves. So he actually has 2 challenges to use. He uses neither of them. Of course the umpire is going to challenge. If you ask the umpire, challenge this play, please. It's such a big game, of course they're going to do it. But he arrogantly dismisses Sanchez, and in my opinion, because the Indians go on to win that game, loses the Yankees that game. That's been the major controversy in this postseason, and that is, it would have been 1-0, and I think a lot of commentators would have come out of that game and said, look, they've got to Kluber early. They've managed to score a lot of runs off Kluber, you know, our Cy Young choice. That would have swayed the momentum completely into the Yankee favor, because they would have had 2 games in New York to win. The Yankees play better in New York. They would have had Tanaka going, and then Severino would have been able to bounce back at home. I think it would have been... And then Kluber would have pitched Game 5, but he's had a really awful Game 2 start. So all of a sudden, the Yankees win that game. And this is all hypothetical, of course. The Yankees win that game. They are in the driving seat. And the impossible, like Michael Kay says in that first clip, may become reality. Instead, he loses the game for them. The Yankees lose that game. They're 2-0 down in the series. They're probably not going to get through. Most likely, almost definitely, not going to get through. In the games that day, so this is day 2 of the regular postseason, so not the wild card game. The Cubs, Hendricks, 7 strong, no run innings for the Cubs. Kind of put Washington almost in their place, really. It was a terrific performance by Hendricks. He managed to out-duel Steven Strasburg, of all pitchers. Strasburg didn't pitch badly. You know, gave up 2 runs in the 6th. I think he didn't pitch into the 8th, no. He gave up 2 runs in the 6th. And then Ryan Madsen came in and gave up another run. But a very strong pitching performance there. And the Cubs going into Washington, winning a game, impressive performance. They take that series 1-0. Earlier in that game, so that game finished. No, later on in that evening, the Dodgers finished their first game against the Diamondbacks 5-7, you could argue is 6 1/3 weak. You know, he gave up 5 runs, Clayton Kershaw. 5 really poor innings. I think that adds to Clayton Kershaw's postseason kind of conundrum almost. So why is it that Clayton Kershaw doesn't play well in the postseason. And if I can get statistics to back this up, look, Clayton Kershaw has. Let me quickly get them up here. Yeah, postseason. He's got a 4.63 ERA compared to his career ERA of 2.36. So that shows that he is. Yeah, it's something about the postseason that just obviously doesn't get to him very well. In both games that they won, because I said that they've already mentioned, that they're 2-0 up in their series games. Yasiel Puig was played of a very high caliber. Seems to be talisman almost of that team of that offense. He got a double and a triple in the first game that they played, and he got in the second game that they played, which they won 5-8 instead of 5-9. He had three bases. He had three base hits and went 4-for-3. A real talisman. And if they can reignite him, he's got so much potential in that bat. They can really get him going. They have so many people in that team. Forsyth can hit, Puig can hit, and then that's not even mentioning Taylor, Seager, Turner, Bellinger, who have been magnificent in that front four all season. They have so many ways that the Dodgers can score runs against you, and no wonder that I feel bad for them. I feel bad for the Diamondbacks because they really, it's so far they haven't been able to match the firepower that the Dodgers have been able to bring upon them. So currently. Then last night, Washington won 6-3 against the Cubs. So they even that series. Zimmerman with a go-ahead 3-run homer. He's had a magnificent year. He's hit 303 with 36 home runs and 108 RBIs. He's definitely been outshadowed by Stanton and Judge. He's had a magnificent year, magnificent bounce-back year. It's a shame that he hasn't been given enough attention as he has. Maybe inside Washington he has, but I haven't heard a lot from in the kind of MLB sphere that he probably does deserve. And then Bryce Harper with a tying home run in the, I want to say, 8th inning. They had a 5-run 8th inning, which powered them past the Cubs. And I thought it was a really interesting decision from the Cubs manager, had a mind blank. Joe Maddon, there we are. Complete mind blank there. Joe Maddon, he brought in, he brought in JR, the reliever that he used. He used twice, and I thought it was kind of strange that why would you use JR Edwards, I think it is. Is it JR Edwards? Edwards Jr. No, he brought in this guy called Edwards Jr. And Edwards, he pitched two games in a row. And then he gave up 3 runs in the second game. I'm like, well, why is he pitching back-to-back games? When you have a bullpen which is quite strong, you can use someone else. You know, maybe he said he was fine. Maybe that's a mistake on him. But somewhere down the line, that decision making of bringing in Edwards into the 8th inning was an absolute mistake. That's where I leave it. So just to kind of wrap up, the Yankees are two games down at the Indians. The Red Sox are 2 games down. Against the Astros. However, they are currently 4-3 up in the bottom of the 7th. Cubs and Washington all square. And Dodgers are 2 games up over Arizona. Arizona with an absolute might mountain to climb. So this has been another episode of Straight Outta Left Field. This has been the postseason struggle. And I hope to get back. It won't be next Friday. But it may be after these divisions have been cleared up, there will be another episode on probably Friday week. Not next Friday, but the Friday after, as a recap to the division series, and we'll have a look at who's won the pennant and which players deserve a very special mention. So once again, I've been Jack Pollard. I thank you for sticking out with us for the entire hour. And I look forward this time, 2 weeks' time. All the best. Thank you very much.